Thank you for joining us on our next It Gets Better podcast. Today I'm here with Dale and we're going to hear a little bit about his story. Welcome, Dale.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here.
So to start off with, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background and your upbringing?
Yeah, sure. So I work at the university in the development and alumni relations team. But I was brought up in the Lake District, which was a wonderful an idyllic childhood, but by the time I'd hit my teenage years, it was not quite as idyllic and more sort of boring, and I desperately wanted to move away to the big city. Mm-hmm. I knew that I was different, but it wasn't until I'd moved away that I could put a label on that difference and call that label being gay. And so it was quite some time before I actually came out. I was late to the party, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I was in no reflection of my upbringing or relationship with my friends and family. It was, I guess, just part of being in a rural community where there were no role models, where there were no other gay people, or I thought there were no other gay people. Now that I've gone back, I realise that actually there were lesbian and gay people around, mm-hmm. just as there are in any village, town or city. Mm-hmm. But it was a normal, even dull upbringing.
Okay. And do you feel you had a supportive family and network of friends when you were growing up?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that helped when I came out. And I remember telling both my parents and my friends, my wider friendship group, you know, I had this big piece of news and I was met with indifference. Most people just shrugged and said, yeah, we know, mm-hmm. we've known for years. And I didn't want to say, well, maybe you should have told me, because I spent the last however many years struggling with this and trying to work out. But yeah, it was a really easy coming out mm-hmm. process. And I remember the first person that I told was my best friend, and he said, he laughed and he said, well, I've got something to tell you as well. I'm gay. Right. And it was the first time that he'd been able to relate his story. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm sure psychologists would have a field day and say, well, you know, there's a good reason why you were best friends and you cleave to one another. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting and I guess really helpful to have somebody who was also going through that coming out experience mm-hmm. at the same time and at the same pace that I was. And similarly, you know, he also found it a very easy experience, because many of our friends were joint friends, and as I say, lots of them said, yes, we know. Okay. We wondered when you were going to tell us.
Yeah. And so what age was this, and was there anything that prompted you to come out at a particular time?
So it was actually after I'd left university.
Okay.
And I'd had girlfriends, and this thought in the back of my head slowly took shape and grew and pushed its way to the, you know, the front of my mind, that actually this wasn't quite fulfilling or quite the life that I wanted or needed to lead. Mm-hmm. And I began to question and think about it more. And so I think it was about 2 years after I left university that I did actually come out. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, I admit to myself, but that would seem as if I was trying to hide it or deny it. It was much more of a organic evolutionary process. Mm-hmm. As I say, I'd always knew that I was different, but I couldn't quite put my finger on it until I'd matured, till I'd left university, mm-hmm. and this process of questioning became more apparent.
Yeah. And did you come out to friends and family at the same time, or was it more of a staged approach to that?
No, I thought I may as well do this in one fell swoop, mm-hmm. and I came out to friends, family, work colleagues, all in one go.
Okay. And was there any reactions that stick in your mind, either positive or negative?
No, I didn't really receive any negative reaction. It was all positive.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess if I have any regrets, and I try to not have any regrets, I don't think that's a really helpful emotion, but if I had any regrets, that I should have done it sooner.
Right.
Because actually it was such an easy process.
Mm-hmm.
And in that respect, I think I'm really lucky, because listening to the previous podcasts, I know that that's not the case for many people.
Mm-hmm.
And also many of my lesbian and gay friends, that's not true. I feel very fortunate in that my coming out story was quite uneventful and just ordinary.
Yeah.
Apart from the first person I told, my best friend. I guess that was fun and funny.
Mm-hmm. And it's always good to hear about these positive experiences that people have, because not all coming out stories are positive, not all of them are negative, so it's good to understand the difficulties that some people may have when it comes to coming out.
Yeah.
So moving after university, moving through life and going to work, is there any stories or instances where you've had to come out where it's proved challenging, or has it always been easy sailing in the world of work?
I think coming out when I was slightly older was also really helpful, because I gained a sense of confidence or a self-belief and a maturity. In terms of work, I've spent most of my career working in higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first job that I had in higher education, and again I was out at work. I had a very supportive and understanding manager. I'm also a parent, so I have a son who's 18.
Mm-hmm.
And my manager at the time was happy for me to leave work early to collect him from nursery and so on. And so, again, a very supportive environment, which meant that it was easy to be out at work. And I remember having a conversation with a very senior academic. And it struck me again that it's not always quite so straightforward, even in a university or an institution where you think people would be very aware of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about families and so on. I was talking about my son, and this senior academic asked what my wife was called, what my wife did. And I said, oh, well, actually, I'm gay. And the academic thought for a moment and asked me what my views on S&M were, which I thought, I wasn't quite sure whether that was a comment on my relationship, my parenting, or my sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But it did strike me that even in HE there are pockets of
mm-hmm.
resistance or pockets of old-fashioned thinking that sometimes we need to challenge. And maybe take our colleagues on a journey.
Yeah, definitely. Mm. It's where it's obviously like stereotypes have come into play there. So it's really having those conversations to combat those stereotypes. And yeah, it's not something that we would hope happens at universities. But
yeah.
Clearly, from your experience, this has happened.
Yeah. Well, there's also, you know, surprises as well. My previous role, I worked for a Middle Eastern royal family. And I was out at work, mm-hmm. and I had assumed that I would have to keep it hidden, that it wouldn't be welcome. But in actual fact, my colleagues, my boss, were very open, very accepting. In fact, one of my closest work colleagues,
mm-hmm.
Who I used to go to the mosque quite regularly with him, he was a very strict Orthodox Muslim. He used to say, the Prophet Muhammad teaches us not to judge people, therefore I won't judge you.
Okay.
And so he was very accepting, didn't necessarily agree with
mm-hmm.
what he termed my life choice.
Okay.
but nevertheless, we were still able to be really good friends. And it struck me that sometimes we have those misconceptions or preconceptions about what other people may think, and in my case, what my Arab colleagues would think, and actually that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
When you sit people down and talk one-to-one, you can be surprised.
Yeah, that's really good to hear. And you mentioned that you've got a son who's 18.
Yes, A-level results tomorrow, fingers crossed.
Good luck. And how has that been from an acceptance point of view of being a gay parent?
When people saw pictures of him on my desk, quite often people would comment about how much he looks like me. And actually, in fact, my partner is the biological father, and that always amused me. But no, people are intrigued, really intrigued, and ask lots of questions, usually about how he was conceived.
Okay.
And that's always very funny to see people struggling to formulate the right question,
right,
or the right form of words. But again, you know, as I said earlier, I've been really fortunate working in a university or in higher education where I've been able to take parental leave, whether that's to pick him up from school because he's been unwell, and people have been generally been very accepting. He's come into work on a couple of occasions when when a previous employer had Bring Your Child to Work Day, which he loved. And again, he was just, we were treated the same as any parent and child.
Great, as it should be.
As it should be, yeah.
Good. So you've been at the university now for several months, and how have you found the support from an LGBT point of view at the University of Manchester?
Yeah. I think a little bit like the rest of the city, Manchester, the city and the university is proud of its LGBT community, and it's really heartening to see the activities, the support, the groups, whether that's Pride, whether that's these podcasts. You know, it makes it feel like a really open and welcoming and diverse place to work, and somewhere where you can be yourself.
Yeah, great. That's what we're aiming to achieve. So I'm glad that in your short time here that you've been able to experience that. So outside of work, have you been involved, or are you involved in any kind of volunteering, community groups, or support networks?
Not currently, although I was a trustee and chair of a small LGBT community charity in South London called the Metro Centre. Although I am also a donor to the Albert Kennedy Trust, which I think started off in Manchester. Mm-hmm. And a great charity providing homelessness services or shelter to LGBT young people.
Okay, that's really good. I know that a lot of people do struggle for time for this, and so one of the benefits of working at the university is that we can use our payroll giving to donate to any local LGBT charity that we want to. So that's another great thing that we can do here. So before we finish, just want to ask you if you have any advice for people, either somebody who is LGBT, somebody who's thinking of coming out, or any of our allies.
Yeah, I think talk to somebody, as I did, and you might be surprised by their reaction, as I was. But I think by talking to somebody, or at least getting advice, it makes that process easier, and then the process becomes, it gets better.
Mm-hmm.
It does what it says on the can. Mm-hmm. And by coming out, it's given me more self-confidence, self-belief. It's meant that I'm more at ease with the person that I am, and that's helped with dealing with discrimination or dismissing discrimination. It's meant that I lead a more happy and fulfilled life, and that, you know, particularly whether that's at work or social life, that it's more fulfilling.
Yeah, great.
So I would say it will get better. It does get better.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you, Dale, for your time today.
Thank you.
It's a very interesting story, and I hope our listeners have enjoyed that. Please keep tuned in, and we'll come back soon with a new It Gets Better podcast.